You're listening to Arts Alive. I'm Vincent O'Donnell, and I'm joined by Joanne Drayton, a New Zealander who's a bit of a criminal in many respects, or more correctly, a crime writer. Joanne, thanks for speaking to Arts Alive.
Oh, thank you very much. It's lovely to be here and talking to you.
You've popped into Melbourne on a very sunny Saturday for a very special occasion. Tell us about Sisters in Crime's annual awards.
Oh, I'm here to actually present the awards for the DAVIT Awards for the crime detective fiction best writers across the board, really, adult, young adult, children's awards, non-fiction, so anything really that sparks off that fascination about crime and murder and all the things that, you know, people get excited about and read and become basically a page-turner.
And you've accepted this invitation because you yourself are internationally published as a crime writer.
I have been captivated by crime writers. So effectively, I've written biographies of women that have been great crime writers. So I've written about Naya Marsh. So she was one of the great classical queens of crime. So she was there amongst in the top four, really. Agatha Christie, Dorothy Sayers, Marjorie Allingham, and Naya Marsh. And I was fascinated because it was an opportunity to read 32 crime novels. It was a hard job, I can tell you. No, it wasn't. You know, it was fantastic. And in a way, and then of course Anne Perry, who was Juliet Hume, and was part of the Parker Hume murder, then revealed much later on as the doyen of crime writing, Anne Perry. So I've written her biography as well. So what I love is the combination of crime writing and life itself, and the mixture and the way that they inform each other, and the way that those people write and what they, why they write and how they write, and what it is that excites them about that genre.
Isn't the fact that real life and crime fiction intersect that makes it so popular? Or perhaps to ask the question directly, why is crime writing ever so popular? It's been popular for 150 years.
Absolutely. I think it sort of, in a way, goes right down to the centre of the core values of what it is to be human. I mean, what things create crime? They are our basic instincts. It's jealousy, it's anger, it's frustration, it's all those intense frustrated love, it's sexual, it's you know, it's all the things that people feel very deeply and intensely. And so actually the genre is one of those very reassuring genres. It has a kind of shape to it. There's usually a resolution. People love resolutions, but they also love, through fiction, to explore the deep, dark, desperate parts of human nature in the safety of their own home room. And people do say that people read crime rather than committing it. So, you know, I think it's because it explores deeply what it is to be human, and it's very appealing.
Let me share with you my theory about why crime writing is so popular, and it's to do with the second law of thermodynamics. Now, that's how I say that, simply because I was brought up once as an engineer. But the law observes that the state of nature is to move from order to disorder, and crime writing reminds us that our job as human beings is the restoration of order, so that it's about bringing order back to disorder, which therefore defies the second law of thermodynamics.
Well, that is so... When you first said it, I thought, nah, this is going to be a bit wacky, but that is true, because that is what crime writing is about. It's about a sort of... a tear in the fabric of life, where something sort of breaks up that connection, and it's about reconnecting the parts and removing that disorder, that disruption to the weft of the fabric of life. That is what crime writing's about. And they talk about the detective as the high priest, the high priest of the sort of 20th century's fairy tale, which is Fairy tales explore the desperate parts of life and human nature, but they also look to restore order and to reaffirm this, in a way, the status quo, I guess. Yeah, so you're absolutely right. There we are. I'm a believer in engineering. Is it? Is it engineering? Okay, there we are. I'm down for that one.
Well, you said you've written biographies of several of the more prominent women crime writers themselves. Do they have any characteristics in common?
Oh, that's an interesting thing, because I desperately wanted to write that book about what does link, especially the Dorothy Sayers, Marjorie Allingham, Agatha Christie and Naya Marsh. What was it? And most of them were very deeply religious. Interestingly enough, except Naya Marsh, who was when she was younger, but kind of lost the desire to be religious, I think. And signed herself up for agnostic. But they were religious people. In other words, they were sort of always looking for the restoration of order, for the high priest to kind of enter the stage and return things to the status quo. But they were very much upper middle class women who were looking to establish themselves, sometimes to support themselves as well, in ways that were acceptable. Acceptable for a middle class woman. And I think also they had that, I mean, I think Agatha Christie particularly had that kind of mind. She loved the problem plot. She loved the sort of, she was a great crossword connoisseur. She would, she had that kind of brain that wasn't so much about the magnificent writing, which I think, you know, I think Sayers and actually Naya Marsh probably did the better writing, but she had that fantastically complex, mind-blisteringly, searingly complex kind of plot that in the end left everybody sort of slightly speechless because they hadn't worked it out.
By religious, do you mean actually with a moral and ethical centre rather than necessarily a religion of a deity?
They were, most of them were Anglicans, good solid Anglicans. So there was definitely a deity there. But I think in a way, I think that's a fair question, because I think in a way that there is a paradigm in their work of a sense of justice. So that the very dark side, that the hard boiled, crime writing, where in some ways there's, it's bereft of, is bereft of a sense of goodness, you know, that there is no nest, and it has that kind of random sense. The universe is random. There is no sense of justice, because what is justice but another arbitrary decision by someone? So, I mean, in a way, they belong to the paradigm, the bigger paradigm of justice and restoration and order, which belongs in a sense. Which parallels their sense of Christianity as well, and I think that bleakness that has no sense of justice and where violence is random and acts of crime just occur is a much more challenging way of looking at the world. It's much less reassuring, because when you restore order, you encourage people to believe in order and that there is an order. But when you don't have one, what do you believe in?
You're listening to Arts Alive, and we're speaking with Joanne Drayton, New Zealand author, our biographer of crime, as well as perhaps a bit of a criminal herself in her writings. We'll get to that in a few minutes. We'll be back after this track with more conversation with Joanne. You're listening to Arts Alive, and we're speaking with Joanne Drayton, New Zealand author, who's visiting Melbourne, visiting Australia, to present the awards at the Sisters of Crime Awards, the annual Sisters of Crime Awards. Tell us a little bit about the state of writing in New Zealand of crime fiction.
Well, I think, it's a great genre to work with. People do read it. There's a big readership. So where there is a readership and a demand and a following for, you know, people's detectives and their stories, there's always a healthy body of work being produced. And, you know, there is over here in Australia, I think we have a slightly different story to tell, because I think if you're you know, antipodean, if you like, if you're looking at it from the, you know, traditional crime writing perspective, because in a way it's much more of a European old world beginning. At least I had that kind of beginning. But we have this sort of different story to tell if we write from the centre of where we're at. If we're Australian, if we're New Zealanders, we have a different story. We don't have different emotions, but we have different worlds to explore those emotions in. And I think as long as people care about the world, they'll care about crime detective fiction, because in a way, that's where we explore those emotions. Yeah, it's healthy. It's wonderfully healthy. And the Sisters in Crime and the DaVita Awards are testimony to the brilliant careers that are out there that are actually making it, not just in New Zealand and in Australia, but actually internationally. You know, there's New York Times bestsellers, there's people winning major awards overseas. And, you know, it's just incredibly, heartwarming in a way to see the genre so alive and well, even though there's a lot of dead bodies in it.
Now, given that, is it fair to say then you can tell by in the reading of Nao Marsh that she is a New Zealand author? Can you make those kinds of distinctions by comparing her writings to the other stars or the female stars of the criminal genre you've mentioned?
She only set four of her novels in New Zealand, so that's quite an interesting thing. And I think more New Zealanders today are writing novels set in New Zealand and Australia, so I don't think they all feel that they have to register everything through the lens of a European experience. But I think you can tell. I don't know. There's a sort of rawness to her writing, maybe. There's a kind of, she was a theatre director in New Zealand, so there's a kind of theatricality to her writing. And to her characters that I feel kind of echoes with me anyway as a New Zealander. And the certainly dyed in the wool colour scheme and the books that she wrote that had New Zealand setting and context. And so she actually brought her detective out to New Zealand, have a wonderful resonance with the country, with the landscape, with the people. And I think, I think there's also, there's a little bit of feeling of an outsider to some of her writing that's set in the UK. There's a kind of fascination and maybe slightly more dispassionate look at some things, which I think she brought from that perspective of being raised in New Zealand, born in New Zealand, raised in New Zealand, and having that an other world experience to bring to her writing, the writing that she set in the UK. Yeah.
We've had a lot of women who write crime fiction on this program over the years. They all come from different backgrounds, quite distinctly different in some cases. In your case, how did you come to an interest in crime fiction? Was it more from an academic background or from a practitioner's background?
Actually, that's a really good... I have a PhD in art history, so I wrote my first three biographies were artists, so they were painters, New Zealand painters, women painters. And I was just dying in a way. Well, that's a bad pun, but I was dying to get out of the studio and the paint shop and the painting theatre kind of discussion and move into something that was sort of different. And Nao Marsh was from Christchurch, so that's where I was educated. Right, I was there 30 years, so it was sort of I kind of regarded it as my home. And she was a big figure in Christchurch. She directed student theatre. And Anne Perry, the other person that I wrote about, so the next person I wrote about, was the Parker Hume murder actually occurred in Christchurch. So I think in a sense, I was writing about what I knew. And I came to it through the academic through the academic. But I always love life more than I love, you know, I found the paintings, I found the painters more interesting than the paintings, and I found, and I find the writers just as interesting as their writing, and I think the combination of the two is absolutely fascinating, and it's enchanted me, really. And I especially, actually, I think probably the Parker Hume and writing about Anne Perry was the most enthralling experience of writing that I've ever had, and there's so much to it, because you have to establish a relationship, and establishing a relationship with Anne Perry, Juliet Hume, was not an easy thing to do, because I wouldn't say she's a reclusive person, but she was very careful, you know, about who she talked to, and was very wary, and so it was quite hard for me to convince her that spending time, a lot of time with me, talking about her writing was going to be a worthwhile experience for her.
Tell us about your latest work.
Oh, yeah, Hudson and Hall's The Food of Love. So I've moved on, perhaps only briefly, from murder to cooking. And these are celebrity chefs. And one of the big thrills, one of them is Peter Hudson and David Hall's. David Hall's was English, an English boy from, grew up in Essex. And Peter Hudson was from Melbourne, so he was. It was fascinating. I actually knew almost nothing about him. He was very quietly, there was almost an absence of information about his childhood. So I had written a lot of the book, because basically it deals with their life and their relationship together. You know, the gay chefs in the 1970s on TV in New Zealand was not an easy thing to be. And then also translated later on into the BBC for 4 years. So a lot of it was their adult life, but the childhood for Peter Hudson was something that was mysterious, and he had been very cagey about. So I had this like black hole in the middle of my story on his childhood, and I didn't really have much, just a whole lot of conflicting stories that he told with media and friends. And so when I arrived in Melbourne, I was sort of quite despondent, and I went to the State Library, and I worked on the worked there, and I went to the I remember going to the desk, and the The guy behind the desk said, he put in some things to see if he could search up some material on Peter Hudson. And he said, look, don't lose heart. He said, go back to your hotel if you've got Wi-Fi. I said, yes, I've got Wi-Fi. He said, go back, keep putting things in the search engine that we've got here. And he said, something may come up. And I went to bed that night, and about 5 a.m., the way you do, when you're troubled and you're poring over things, I thought, oh, my God, I know, I'll put his mother's full name in, because, you know, Peter's not exactly going to shake up the world, and Hudson's not that unique. But I thought Mary Ethel Hudson might catch a few entries. Anyway, so I put it in my computer. I was sitting up, I was in bed, you know, like it was 5 o'clock in the morning. It's about the time when I should have been asleep in bed. But so I put this in, and it came up. His mother had been arrested and charged with murder in 1926. And what she had done, she and her husband had done, this was what they did do, was actually dress up the cadaver that was, you know, the individual unfortunate person that was dead, dress them up in their clothing, and take them across in the early hours of the morning in Melbourne in 1926, and prop the body up against a tree in a sort of side street of Melbourne, and I know that it's all in my book, and just leave her there. So she was discovered, and you know, there was an autopsy, and they worked out that it looked like it was a septic abortion, and they put, you know, the detectives, amazing detectives, kind of did a whole lot of incredible detective work, and worked out finally that Mrs. Hudson had likely been responsible, and the doctor who worked in her number of maternity hospitals, which were also sometimes abortion clinics, yes. So, wow. I got out of bed. I did a full jig around the around the motel that I was in, or hotel actually, and I just couldn't believe it. I was just stunned, because in a way it turned out that we weren't even really totally sure who his parents were, because they were likely not to be actually the people. And in fact, the family kind of confirmed in a documentary that was made that it was likely that Mary Ethel Hudson was not his mother, even though she was identified on the birth certificate. So it blew it apart. What was he? Whose child was he? Was he his sister's child, who was much older? What, did he belong to one of the unfortunate mothers who kind of wanted to have a child but and not an abortion, but actually couldn't then take the child home? So who was he? What a mystery.
And if you want to solve that mystery or learn more of it, it's all there in the book called
Hudson and Hall's The Food of Love.
And Joanna Drayton from New Zealand, who is in Melbourne to award Sisters in Crime Awards, having made the pursuit of biography something like a high adventure, I thank you very much for speaking to Arts Alive.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.